Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week, believe it or not, from the Car Talk booth at the Olympic Village. We're pushing a new event here at the Olympics, the Camaro skating event.
Camaro skating?
Yes.
What's that?
You put a Camaro on a quarter of an inch of snow and watch it spin around. It's a freestyle event. You know? Actually, I have a 19-year-old son who is dying to have a Camaro / Firebird.
You don't want him to die, so he ain't getting one.
I keep offering him, generously, I think, my Dodge Dakota pickup.
Isn't it interesting
he
how
he keeps
fussy.
Holding his nose?
Yeah, I mean, you notice, I mean, you're offering him free of charge. Did anyone ever offer you free of charge? Yeah, actually, someone did. I mean, yes. How many 20-year-old kids could get a car?
Well, I remember, you know, it's funny because at first I was angry when he said he didn't want it. But then I remember that Dad offered me his 60 Rambler. And I refused it, too.
Never offered me diddly.
Well, that's you know why? You ruined one of his cars once and he never forgave
what?
You.
What?
His 51 Dodge.
I ruined it? How?
By running it without oil?
Oh. You know,
I remember. Get Dad on the phone.
He's already called me once to rant and rave about truck drivers. This is bad.
Okay, you got him on the phone? Hello, Dad.
Yeah.
Hey.
You settle an argument for us.
We're here doing our radio show. You may have heard of it.
Oh, Dad, yeah. You got to help solve a little disagreement between my brother and me.
Yes.
Do you remember? Now, he claims no knowledge of this, no recollection whatsoever. Didn't Tommy ruin a car of yours by running it without motor oil in it?
He most certainly did.
Oh! I have no recollection whatsoever of this.
I'll tell you the car now.
What is it?
The 51 Dodge.
Oh!
Semi-automatic.
Right.
He came home one day and he says, Dad, the muffler on the car was gone. I went out and I started it and I knew exactly what was wrong the minute I started it.
It wasn't the muffler.
I pulled out the dipstick and there was no dip in it.
I know I must have blotted this. It must have been such a traumatic experience for me that I blotted it out of my memory.
Come out of college, I guess.
Oh, I was a college man.
Yeah.
And is that what they teach you? Is that what I said?
Maybe I was out sick that day.
I don't know. But, you know, these things don't happen.
So what did you do?
Day. I mean, that's been continual use of running the engine without any oil in it.
Yeah, well, he knows now.
So what did you do? You put a new motor in it?
Obviously, you had the motor rebuilt.
No, I didn't have it rebuilt. I put a rebuilt motor in it from the...
Oh, I remember. Right. Yeah. Why do I remember this?
They even put a new clutch in it.
I didn't do anything wrong. Did I ever ruin one of your cars, Dad?
Did you ever ruin one?
Yeah.
Not that I can remember.
That he can remember.
You never drove any.
Well, see, I'm the good son.
All right, well, thanks for the information. I'll never speak to you again.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll see you later.
Yeah, all right.
Thanks, I'm glad
that's all squared away.
Thanks for clearing up this little mystery.
Yeah.
See you, Dad.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
Well, it's true that people tend to blot out those terrible, traumatic experiences.
I mean, I do remember...
Maybe it was that trip to the woodshed that did it.
I remember that I used to drive that car to school occasionally. And I remember that it never had any gas in it when I returned it.
Or oil.
Or oil, evidently.
You want to take a call?
Yeah.
If you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello?
Hi.
Who's this?
Hi, how are you doing? This is Eric. I'm calling you from Monmouth, Maine.
Eric.
Yeah.
Monmouth.
Yep. Small town.
Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about where you're from anymore.
Oh, okay, fine. Then
we don't care where you're from.
We don't care where you're from, but is Eric with a K or with a C?
We don't care about that either.
With a C. And how far up is Monmouth?
Oh, it's up near Augusta.
Well, all right, where's that?
It's an hour north of Portland.
Where's that?
and Portland is like
3 hours north of Boston.
So you are 3 hours north of Boston.
Yep.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
no,
I've actually been to Portland.
I've been to Boston.
I didn't see you.
So what's up, Eric?
Well, listen, I have an 86 Dodge four-wheel drive full-size pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
And it's a great truck, but in the last few years, it's developed a problem where it doesn't really like cold weather. And so as the temperature gets down around 5 degrees or 10 degrees, the steering wheel starts to squeak. But that's not the real problem. At about 5 to 10 below zero, I'll park the car, I'll go into work, and a half an hour later, the horn will start blowing. And the same thing on really, really, really cold nights. You know, you'll park it, and a few hours later, the horn will start blowing. So I have to run outside, open the door, beep the horn as if I was beeping it while I was driving it, and then it stops.
Yeah.
And it's
Oh, really? That stops it?
So when you bang on the horn,
yep,
it stops.
The horn button.
That's good.
That's right. It's good?
Yeah, that's good.
Well, it's good that I can stop it, sure.
But you have to run out in minus 5 degree weather in your jammies.
I've run out in minus 25 degree weather in my jammies.
You run fast, I bet, huh?
And that seat must be cold.
Yeah, jammies plus.
Well, have you taken it to the shop to have them look at it? I mean, have they done anything?
Yeah, I took it to a shop, and they took the steering wheel off, and they looked all around on the inside there, and they said, geez, I have no idea what it is, and put it back on.
Okay, here's...
Oh, they didn't twist and bend anything?
No.
Okay, here's the way... No, I mean, they could have figured it out. My guess is that you have a faulty horn switch.
Okay.
The thing in the steering column. But this is how you're going to figure it out.
Okay.
Let them show you how to remove the steering wheel, or maybe you know how to do that already.
Okay.
And what you want to do is the next time it's going to be 10 below...
Yeah.
...or colder, you want to take the steering wheel off and lay it on the seat.
Okay.
And if the horn blows then the problem is not in the steering, in the horn button. Because you will have removed that by taking the wheel off. And the problem is either in the circuitry or probably in the relay.
The thing is, I may have to do that 3 or 4 times.
You may have to, but this is an important thing. You have to solve this problem.
Right.
This is a very curious thing. I mean, we've never really understood why this happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those rare Pons and Fleischmann cold fusion things happening.
Strange things happen when you get temperatures below zero.
Right.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they decided not to design it for all temperatures.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes up in the engineering meetings in Detroit.
They say, those people in Monmouth.
This is not going to work at 10 below zero. They can take
the
it.
Truck.
They're tough. They can take it. So what if they wake up in the middle of the night?
That's right.
I mean, you could also, if you didn't want to go through this bother, you could just find where the relay is and unplug the relay every night.
Uh-huh.
You could do that, or you could find the fuse and unplug that, or put a toggle switch in with where the fuse is.
Right.
But I would suggest, if in the interest of science, that you take off the wheel.
Very good.
And I bet you'll find out that with the steering wheel off and sitting on the seat, the problem is solved. And
okay,
then you can go
if it's
and,
not in the steering wheel, where would it be?
Well, it could be the relay.
It could be.
I mean, typically...
Well, that's why this test is so definitive. If it blows with the steering wheel off, buy a relay.
All right.
And if that doesn't fix it, buy a truck.
Or just disconnect something, take the fuse out, and you'll never know why it happens, but it won't happen anyway. So you won't care.
I'll give it a shot, and I'll let you know.
That's right. I mean, in a few months, it'll be winter anyway, and you won't have to worry about it. What season do they call this season in Maine?
Oh, this is brutal.
Well,
they go from fall to winter to brutal, and then to spring.
And then back to winter.
It rained last night, so it's almost spring.
Oh.
Awesome. I bet you the crocuses are still about a foot below the surface. See you, Eric.
Thanks
Take
for
care.
Calling,
Thank
Eric.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Chris in Savannah, Georgia.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Except I'm calling on a matter of life and death, literally.
Then we won't fool around. We'll go right to the
heart of the
matter.
We won't mess around. I won't discuss Savannah, although I wanted to. We'll go right to the matter of life and death. Go ahead.
Well, it's my husband's life that's in jeopardy because
You're
I'm going
kill him.
To kill him if he doesn't stop. And I had warned him he would have to deal with you all otherwise. But he has been an inveterate recycler for years before it was trendy, and I appreciate that about him. But the way that he feels he has to recycle cans these days, in order to get them squashed, he used to stomp on them, and then he used to use one of those hand-holding things.
I know what he's doing.
First, it was his car.
He's driving over them.
And I told him not to do it. The excruciating, crunching noise, it's like fingernails on a blackboard.
He's driving over them with his car?
Yes. I mean, he would line them up behind the tires and drive over them. And so now he doesn't he doesn't have a morning class. I leave before him, so we don't fight about that. Now he puts them behind my tires. And, well, you think it's funny. I mean, you walk out in the morning. I don't think to look under my tires to see if there's anything under there when I'm getting in the car to go to work in the morning. And he's
got them all lined up.
Well, under each tire, one. Right. I mean, I think he realized my nerves couldn't take.
Oh, I see. Just one under each tire. Oh,
right.
Okay.
Okay. So I back out, and there's this hideous crunching, and I slam on the brakes, wondering what I run over, and think, well, the kids have been fooling around in the carport, and, you know, they were playing with the cans. Well, I'm driving off. He's standing with our daughter at the bus stop, and, you know, he's got this little gleam in his eye, I can tell. The next day, it does it again, and this time the smile is demonic, and I almost ran him down, but he was standing too close to our daughter.
Here's what you do. I got it. You
please
get
tell him this isn't good for the tires. I know it's not good for my nerves.
Telling him isn't going to work. You got to scare the hell out of
him. You need corrective action.
We need some negative reinforcement here. And I think what you need to do is get yourself a tape recorder and record a cat. Meow! See, and then watch him when he gets out in the morning, he gets in the car, and just as he backs up, you play the tape, he thinks he did in the neighbor's cat.
That's pretty.
It might make him happy. That,
does he like cats?
Not really.
That's too bad.
Maybe he'll think it's ours, though.
Maybe he'll think it's yours. That's right. And that might shake him up and make him realize what it feels like for you.
So you folks generate like 4 or 5 cans a day?
Well,
at least,
He doesn't put away quite as much beer as he used to, so it's more the occasional cans now. I mean, before you couldn't hardly get the cars into the carport, but now it's just a matter of keeping them squashed so it's not taking up a lot of room. And this he finds to be an efficient way of, you know, dealing with four at a time. And
but he is a somewhat playful fellow as well, because he likes to sort of sneak them under the wheels of your car.
Well,
that's kind of cute.
He does have sort of a wicked streak, but then he was very embarrassed when he thought I might call and ask you.
You considered switching to bottles?
Oh.
That might cure him.
I mean, almost everything that comes in a can also comes in a bottle.
Wouldn't that fix it?
That'll straighten him out.
I like that.
So we've got the cat on tape and the bottle.
Cat on tape and bottles.
And if that doesn't work, you kill him.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, large blunt objects that, you know, like a turkey that we could eat later. And
sure.
So I'm not wrong in thinking this isn't good for the tires.
Well,
that I'm not being an alarmist.
No, I mean, I suppose it there's a chance when the thing gets crushed that it could certainly cut into a tire.
Oh, sure.
You know,
it could certainly. I mean, when the thing unless it gets crushed without actually breaking. I mean, if it broke and you got a sharp edge sticking up, it could easily puncture the tire. And
yeah,
I suppose you could make believe that happened. I mean, that would cure him of it. Take
right.
a couple of nails, drive them into the tire, and when he backs up, say, oh, that's done. I guess it's too bad.
Right. Make sure it's his car that gets the flats.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
And that'll cure him of it.
Oh, dear.
And then you'll even have the chance to say, I told you that was going to happen, hon.
You stupid.
No, I wouldn't say it. I would just look righteous.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I
smug.
Smug.
Yeah. Smug is good.
You've been practicing that, haven't you? Getting ready for that day.
I've already got it down, I have to admit.
Slash a couple of his tires and don't say anything. That'll cure him. Good luck, Chris.
Thank you,
Thanks
guys.
For calling.
I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt Hill from Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville!
Hi, Matt.
Calling in concerning a problem with my old friend, Fat Al.
Fat Al.
He was a 93 Acura Legend with about 245,000 miles.
Yeah.
When we drive at about 70, 75, occasionally, usually it's when going under load, like going uphill on the highway, his front end will vibrate, and the vibration goes over to the gas pedal as well.
Oh.
Are you on a cell phone or some lousy?
Yeah, hopefully I'm not breaking up. I'm actually down in Nashville, so
you're not driving, are you?
Well, I confess, I am driving.
Oh,
you
Matt,
driving, talking the phone at the same time. Pull over.
I will actually pull over.
Oh man, bless your heart.
And we can hear him get hit by the semi.
Thanks. Have you had anyone look at the front end?
No, I have not. Front end seems like it's kind of loose as well when just traveling over bumpy roads, that kind of thing.
I'm going to guess you need ball joints in this thing.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's a good thing we asked you to pull over, because this is kind of a dangerous situation.
In fact, put on the emergency flashers and wait for the state police to come by, because you need to get towed. No, you should get it checked right away.
Okay.
Because if you have a bad ball joint and it's causing so much vibration that it's telegraphing into the floor of the car, but that's why you're feeling it in the pedal.
Okay.
You could easily be ready to have a broken ball joint.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean,
Matt,
you could simply have a bad tire, obviously, or an out-of-balance tire. But to be on the safe side, have all that stuff checked, because if a ball joint or a tire then breaks, you're going to die.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if it breaks, the wheel falls under the car, and there's no question that you will crash. So, I mean, if you have to drive back to Louisville, I wouldn't do it without having this checked.
Okay.
And you can go into any tire store, you know, go into a Goodyear or some such place like that and ask them to put it on the lift and check out your front end.
Okay.
Under no circumstances should you go on the highway at 55 miles or 75 miles an hour, because it really is very, very dangerous.
And don't talk on that damn phone while you're on the road. You'll kill somebody.
He knows that. He's never going to do that again.
We'll send you a bumper sticker that says...
Hang up and drive.
You got it, brother.
Got it.
All right, thanks so much, guys.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Okay, it is just about time to answer the puzzle that's been weighing on America's collective mind for nearly 2 weeks now.
Actually, it's been 14 days. I mean, that's practically 2 weeks, isn't it?
Very close.
Well,
this
is the famous prisoner and light switch puzzle, the one that is being discussed at sixth grade dances in Aberdeen or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. And I'll have the puzzler and the answer in just a minute. So don't shut off the car and go into the hardware store just yet. And even though Ted Ligety heaves his gold medal at his radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk...
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean...
Old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was a tricky little puzzler.
And you bet.
This was from my Prisoner and Light Switch series. I actually got it from our pal, Professor Stan Zadonik, who teaches at Brown, and he said that this puzzle was making the rounds at mathematicians' parties in Hungary. But that was sort of a red herring, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
Anyway, I'm going to read the puzzle just as I did a fortnight or two ago.
Go.
The warden meets with his 23 prisoners when they arrive. He gives them a challenge. He says, you may meet together today and plan a strategy, but after today, you will be in isolated cells and have no communication with each other whatsoever. None. Zilch. Mm. There's a room in the prison that contains two light switches labeled A and B. They're regular old light switches, you know, up and down, you know, but I'm not telling you their present positions, which could be any combination, and these switches are not connected to anything. After today, from time to time, whenever I feel so inclined, I will select a prisoner at random and escort him to the switch room. This prisoner will select one of the two switches and reverse its position. He must move one, but only one of the switches, and then he'll be led back to his cell. No one else will enter the switch room until I lead the next prisoner there, and he'll be instructed to do the same thing, change the position of one and only one of the switches.
Right, and none of the prisoners can see this happen.
No, no, they're led back to their cells, which have no windows, doors, or anything, not even air. I'm going to choose prisoners at random. I may choose the same guy, you know, three times in a row, or I may jump around, come back to somebody, but given enough time, everyone will eventually visit the switch room an equal number of times. And what I want you prisoners to tell me is when every single prisoner has visited the switch room at least once. So at any time, any one of you can declare to me, we have all visited the switch room. If it's true, that is, each of the 23 prisoners has visited the switch room at least once, you will all be set free.
Oh, my God.
If it is not true, meaning any one of you has not been to the switch room, you will all be fed to the alligators.
It's a fair deal.
So the question was, what strategy did the prisoners devise? Now, after letting everyone ponder this for a
minute. And how did people who spent their lives robbing banks figure this out?
Well, that's another good question. But I let everyone struggle with it for a week, but I did give out a couple of hints last week.
Yeah.
The first one was, forget about the mathematicians' parties in Hungary. You don't have to be a mathematician to figure this out. In fact, I felt an extremely clever sixth grader could do it, although Berman couldn't. How many years were you in sixth grade? Like I said, a clever sixth grader could figure it out. And the second hint was, try solving it for like three people instead of 23.
Yeah, the number 23 was really a red herring.
Anyway, here's the crux of it.
Go ahead, man.
So the prisoners all meet, and the leader of the prison says, look, guys, I have a strategy.
Mm.
First, there's only one guy who can count past two, so we're naming him the counter. And he's going to be responsible for making the call when the time comes, the call being, we've all been there. To the switch room. He then proceeds to give instructions to the other inmates. He says, we're going to designate switch A as the real switch. That's the only switch that matters to the
switch
counter.
Switch A, arbitrarily, the one on the left.
Well, the switch is labeled A and B.
A and B, okay.
Doesn't mean we don't know where it is, but it's switch A.
Yeah.
The other switch B is the dummy. It won't tell us anything, and you just use it when you have to move a switch but don't want to or can't move switch A. You got it?
I got it.
So switch A is the meaningful switch, and switch B is nothing, the dummy.
It's nothing. Because the guys have to move a switch.
Exactly.
According to the warden.
So each of the 22 prisoners is told, when you go into the switch room, don't forget there are 23 prisoners, but each of the other remaining prisoners, the 22, are told, when you go into the switch room, we want you to move switch A to the on position. If switch A is already in the on position, then leave it there. Flick switch B and walk out. All the prisoners nod.
Got it.
Now I want each of you to flick switch A to the on position twice and only twice. So if you go in there and switch A is already on, that doesn't count. I want each of you to actually flick it to on two times. You got it?
They nod again.
All the prisoners nod. One of them raises his hand tentatively. Yes, Berman? He asks, who's going to be flicking switch A off? Good question, says the leader. The counter is the only one with the authority to turn off switch A.
Mm-hmm.
So each time the counter is taken into the switch room and he finds switch A in the on position, he knows that at least one prisoner has been there. It could be one prisoner who came in and turned it on, or it could be six prisoners, the first one turning it on, the next five leaving it on and not doing anything. But when the counter walks in and finds switch A in the on position, he knows at least one prisoner has been in the room since the last time he turned the switch off.
But that's not true.
Well, it isn't true, but trust me, we'll get to that condition.
Because it is possible, just to make it clear, it is possible that the switch was in the A up position already.
Exactly. And when you work it all out, the counter has to turn off switch A 44 times in order to know that all 22 of the other prisoners have been into the switch room. And the reason he has to count that high is because he has to wait until everyone has been in twice, because the original position of the switch isn't known.
Aha!
In other words, if the warden started switch A in the on position and the counter was brought in first, he could be fooled into thinking that another prisoner had been in there. And that's why it's 44 instead of 22.
Got it.
And now if you have trouble understanding the strategy, try it for just two prisoners. Prisoner 1 and prisoner 2. And let's say 2 is the counter. Prisoner 1 is brought in first. He sees switch A in the off position, so he flicks it on. And let's say prisoner 1 is brought in again. Remember, the warden picks prisoners randomly. So prisoner A leaves switch A on and flicks switch B, which doesn't matter. At some point, the counter guy comes in, the other prisoner, finds switch A on and flips it off. That's once, he says. But he doesn't really know that the guy has been there.
Exactly, because it could have been up to begin with.
But eventually, prisoner 1 is brought back in and he turns switch A on again. So when prisoner 2 comes back, he sees switch A on and he knows that the other prisoner has definitely been there. And he says to the warden, our work is done here.
Mm-hmm.
So the number of times that the counter has to turn switch A off is exactly twice the number of remaining prisoners. That is, the prisoners minus him.
Yeah.
So if there were 23 prisoners, including him, he has to turn the switch off 44 times. If there are two prisoners...
two times.
He has to turn the switch off two times. Pretty cute, eh?
Absolutely perfect.
So who's our winner?
Well, we're going to have two winners this week because some people got it the first week. Some others needed the hints. So the winners, selected at random from the 10,000 people who responded to this, are Kathy Bickle from Campbell, California, and Mark Quinlivan from Dundalk, County Louth, Ireland. I love it. So Kathy and Mark are each going to get a $26 gift certificate.
Oh, they don't split it?
No. They're each going to get $26 to the Shameless Commerce Division. And Mark from County Louth, you'll be lucky if that covers shipping and handling in your case.
We'll send you a T-shirt.
Come on, we should pay the shipping and handling for him.
Yeah, we should. Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so sit tight. I don't know what to call this puzzler, but maybe...
Is it part of the Prisoner series?
No. Maybe this should be the regression to the mean, or rather a return to bogosity.
Oh!
Or yeah. Mediocrity. Anyway, if you'd like, you can give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Will Winfrey.
Hi, Will.
Where are you from, Will?
Joplin, Missouri.
Oh, yes. I have never had the pleasure. But somehow Joplin conjures up for me a great place.
Riverboats and whatever.
No, I can see people hanging out.
You know, we go down the corner and watch the stoplight change.
Yeah, that's it. That's the kind of place for me.
But
yeah.
It does have that romantic sound to it, and I love the way you say Missouri.
Yeah, well, it's actually, if you've ever been here, it's misery.
Misery. But, I mean, is that the proper pronunciation from Missourian?
Missouri?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the way Missourians say it.
I will say it that way from now on. I want to be one of the guys. I want to watch the stoplight change.
Okay.
So, what's on your mind, Will?
Well, I've got an 88 Ranger, one of the little baby pickup
truck.
A baby pickup truck, right.
And I've got a 180-pound dog, a Great Pyrenees.
Hmm.
And when old Moses sits in the truck with me over on the passenger side, he's got his feet down on the floor and his
butt up on the seat
where it belongs and his head hanging up over the dashboard.
Oh.
Well, he had a full stomach the other day, and we was on one of our fine improved bumpy roads.
Oh, I can see it now.
He blew beets, tossed his cookies, he spewed onto the dashboard.
Into the vent?
Into the vent.
The defrost vent?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I took it down to the shade tree mechanic after I squeegeed up most of the hunks.
Yeah.
And I said, what can we do? Because this smells terrible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's bad enough when humans do it, but dogs are disgusting.
Yeah, because you know what they lick on, you know.
Yeah, we do know. That's why it's disgusting. So, I mean, did you tell him what it was?
Yeah.
Did he refuse to work on it? I know no. I would have.
Yeah.
I asked him what he could do to fix it, and he said, I could take the whole dashboard out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think you have to go to that extreme.
Okay.
No.
Now, here's my thought is he was talking, you know, a couple hundred dollars to do that kind of work. And I was thinking, should I pay him to do the work, or should I sell the truck to somebody who has a cold?
I got to have a real bad cold. Yeah.
Should I get an air sick bag for my dog?
Gee.
No, really, what can I do about this?
Well, if obviously the stuff either went down the vent.
Uh-huh.
Or it stayed on the dashboard. Because
it went in the vent.
Right, but not all of it. I mean, some of it stayed. So suffice it to say that what didn't stay on the dashboard went down the vent.
Right.
That vent looks like, you know the thing that goes in your vacuum cleaner that you vacuum your rug with? If you look at that, that's what that shape like, and it comes down to a circular connector at the end to which a hose attaches that comes from the heater box.
And the entire dashboard doesn't have to be taken out. To get at this.
No,
thing.
You can take off the glove box. Fortunately, he was not driving.
Right.
Because he was sitting in the passenger seat. If he had been driving, this would have been a bigger problem.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is take the glove compartment out.
Okay.
That's easy to do. And you'll be probably looking right at this thing.
And it looks like a funnel.
Okay.
But you need to wear surgical mask and gloves because it's going to be gross, isn't it?
It's going to be gross, but I don't think it's that hard because once you take out the glove box, you will see the end of this funnel-shaped thing, and it's got a hose clamp around it with the hose that goes to it, and loosen it up, have a barrel ready. And then you could actually flush it out.
Well, you can take the whole thing off. You can take the hose off. You can take off this duct. And you can probably clean the thing out pretty well.
No, actually, I don't think there's any harm in actually pouring water down there.
Hmm.
It'll just come right out the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, onto my carpet.
No, you'll have a bucket down there.
Oh, okay. Put a bucket down there.
Put a bucket down there, pour some water in it, and you'll just flush that baby right out.
What I would do is line the floor, actually, with a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And let the stuff pour onto the plastic bag and puddle in the middle of it. Then you can pick the whole thing up and dump it, put another bag in there and do that. But, boy, it must have been pretty bad,
huh? It's not as bad as it seemed at the time. I think it's...
I don't know. You weren't riding him, was it, when it happened? It was pretty bad.
Yeah, but I think you can clean it up, Will.
Okay.
Good luck. You're going to need it.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
See you later, Will.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Colorado Springs.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I'm calling about my 1991 Toyota four-wheel drive pickup truck.
Ooh.
And when I am stopped at a light, if I have the car in neutral and I have my foot on the brake, it idles. It just revs up and down, up and down. But as soon as I take my foot off the brake, it idles just fine.
Really?
Really.
I like it.
Yeah.
And if I have it in gear, it idles fine. But if I have it out of gear and my foot on the brake,
now, wait a minute.
Revs.
Is this a stick shift?
Yes.
If you have it in gear with your foot on the clutch, you mean?
Right. If I have it in gear with my foot on the clutch,
but how about if you have it in gear
fine.
With your foot on the clutch and another foot on the brake?
Then it revs up and down.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Good.
Thank goodness. I thought we were going to have to phony up another answer.
That you wouldn't be able to do it.
Jennifer, for cooperation.
I had faith in you that you, no matter what her answer was, you could come up with
it. The wheels were turning, man. Well,
she has a classic.
Yes.
Vacuum leak.
Yes.
And we even know where it is now.
Yeah, we do know.
She told us.
Yeah, you told us where the leak is.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
The leak is your power brake booster.
Okay.
Your truck, like most vehicles, in fact, I don't think anyone anywhere sells anything anymore without power brakes.
Right.
Or what they call power assist brakes, and your Toyota is no exception.
And it operates on vacuum.
From the engine. So what it does is when you step on the brakes, there's a huge diaphragm, and that diaphragm actually gets sucked by the vacuum created by the engine when it runs, and it actually assists or multiplies the force that you apply to the brake pedal so that you don't have to stand on that pedal to get the thing to stop.
Okay.
But you need a new power booster.
Is that a big thing?
It's big, but it's not expensive.
Yeah, it's a few $100, though.
Okay. Now, is there any way that would also cause my taillights to go out when I push on the brake?
We have a bad connection.
What? Your taillights or your brake lights?
Well, on one side, everything goes off when I push on the brake.
Yeah, because you have you have...
No, the answer is no. It couldn't cause this. Something else is causing that.
Okay.
Right. You have a bad connection back there or a bad... Maybe something as simple as a bad bulb.
Okay.
But you should take out the bulb in question and put the bulb from the other side, which works correctly.
We tried that.
And it did the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
It stays on the same side,
mm-hmm.
in which case it's a wire.
Yeah, it's either a wiring problem or the socket is bad.
Okay.
But that's easy.
Okay.
When you're in having the $900 booster done, they'll throw that in for free.
Maybe they'll throw that in for free.
Yeah. Good luck, Jennifer.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, it's that part of the show again.
Is this where all the stunned radio execs come into the studio and are so excited about the show that they do, like, backflips?
No, this is where Bugsy wakes up startled and flips back off his stool. But you were close, man.
We'll be back with a brand new Puzzler in just a minute.
But I fall.
And even though Mr. Potato Head wishes some kind child would pull his ears off whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yeah.
Someone sent in the seed from which this Puzzler grew. I
understand.
I had to...
You don't have to explain.
...reobfuscate.
Yeah.
Here we are. It was Monday morning, and Krusty was up bright and early and ready for his commute to work. Yesterday hadn't been a particularly good day, and he sensed that today might be worse, hence the early start. Anyway, Krusty carefully backed out of his driveway and drove to the end of his street. He slowed as he approached a stop sign there and, of course, came to a full stop before making his way through the intersection. At the next intersection, he slowed and stopped for that stop sign as well. Just then, he noticed the flashing light of a police car in his rearview mirror, the all-too-familiar sign to pull over and produce a license and registration.
Yeah.
Neither one of which he had, probably. The officer approached, citation book in hand, and Krusty asked if there was a problem, like anyone would do. Is there a problem, officer?
Yeah.
No brake lights, he says. I've followed you since you pulled out of your driveway. I've watched you stop two times at stop signs, and I didn't see any brake lights come on. Krusty says, no way, man. My brake lights work just fine. I'll show you. So he asks the police officer to go and stand by the back of the car.
And he floors
puts
it
in reverse. Runs him over. No, he asks him to go and stand at the back of the car.
And
he steps in the brake pedal, and the policeman notices.
Let me guess. They work.
All three of them. You know, the high-mounted light, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And they come on just as Krusty had predicted.
Yeah.
The question is, how did he pull this off? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of a John Deere Model 5525 9-horsepower utility tractor with high-torque, low-emission PowerTech diesel engine, electro-hydraulic 3-point hitch, 4-wheel drive, climate-controlled cab, and easy-to-read large print instrument panel. So I don't need my reading glasses to mow the lawn. And ship it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Well, if we actually get one of these, who's going to keep it?
Oh, I plan to assemble it in your living room. Bugsy saying, <"Rrr." laughs> I could use one of these.
I know.
Oh, boy, look, you can email us your answer from cartalk.com, but if you have a question for us, don't hesitate to call. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Alana calling from Detroit.
Alana with an A or an E?
An A.
Okay.
A-L-A-N-A.
That's right.
From Detroit.
From Detroit.
Hi, Alana.
What kind of a Chevy do you drive?
I drive a Volkswagen. I'm not a Chevy driver.
A VW Chevy. What's up, Alana?
Okay, well, sometimes I have this problem where I can't get my car to shift out of park.
Okay. You start it up?
I start it up, and I step on the brake, and I can't get it out of park.
Okay. The most likely candidate, what do you do when it won't shift out of park? Let's go there.
Well, sometimes I, like, step on the gas, and I turn my wheel around, and sometimes then I can get it out of park. Sometimes I can't do it, and once I couldn't get my car out of park for, like, 2 hours, and this guy came to tow my car, and this, like, big guy got in my car, and he started it right up, and it shifted right out of park.
Well, big guy, huh?
Big guy.
What year VW is this?
2001.
Uh-huh.
And what kind of VW is it?
It's a Jetta TDI.
And have you ever noticed that the inability to shift is worsened with cold weather?
Yes.
Hmm.
It does get worse when it's cold.
Yes, indeed.
Just about everything gets worse when it's cold. Well, yeah. I mean, Not skating rinks. Or ice fishing. Ice fishing is improved with the cold. The first thing that comes to mind is there's a switch attached to the brake pedal. And in some cars, I'm not sure if it's true with this car, but I think it may be. It's part of the brake light switch, and it's the shift interlock switch.
Okay.
And it's what automotive engineers have put into cars to keep us from shifting into any other gear than park without stepping on the brake.
But my foot is on the brake.
It is, but it's not firmly enough on the brake.
But the switch is not working.
The switch isn't working.
Right. And when and the clue, I think, was when that big tow truck driver got in with that size 14 shoe, and he planted that pedal down, he made that switch. He willed that switch to work.
So do you weigh about 110?
No, I wish. But close enough. Close enough for now.
Close enough.
Well, so you have two options. You can replace the switch or you can start bulking up.
Well, I mean, what I would do is try stepping on the brake harder and see if that does it. If it doesn't do it, then you're going to have the switch replaced.
Well, you're going to have the switch replaced in any case, but at least it will corroborate the theory.
Okay.
So if stepping on the brake harder makes it absolutely come out of park, then go into your dealer or your repair shop and tell them that you think that the shift interlock switch is faulty. Got it?
Shift interlock.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
See you, Lana.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call.
Good luck.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, who's this?
Good. This is Jeremy calling from Beckett, Massachusetts.
Jeremy, Beckett.
Yes.
That must be out west.
Yes, it's right near Pittsfield, Mass.
Ah.
Yeah, the far end of the turnpike.
Yeah, really?
But I'm better known around the garage as the bolt breaker.
The bolt breaker, huh?
I just seem to have this fantastic ability to, every time I have a real simple repair on my car, I'll go out and try to do it myself. You know, case in point, the last one was the water pump. I think the water pump on my truck cost about $90.
Yeah.
And I broke a bolt that went way back.
Ooh.
It's an 88 Ford F-150, so the bolt went way back.
Oh.
And, of course, it broke in such a way I couldn't get it out. I wound up having to have the truck towed.
Yeah, to pull the engine.
This is the long bolt? Was this one of the long bolts that goes through the timing case cover?
Exactly.
Oh, you stupid.
That's the one. Every other bolt came right off, no problem.
Did you have to pull the engine to get it out?
Oh, no.
No, but he had it for a couple days. And then, of course, it's one of those ones where they get in there like, well, it's all the way at the timing cover. The truck's got 130,000 miles on it. I'm already in here.
Oh, yeah, they did the right thing by putting a new chain on.
A new chain and a new pulley or
gears. Two new gears and a chain.
Yeah.
Right.
Good perfect idea.
You know, but the whole thing wound up costing me $500.
It was a blessing in disguise.
Instead of 90.
Yeah.
But so, every time I do it, I do brake. I went to try to do brake pads. I broke a bolt off in there and had to have it towed. And
yeah.
I just keep doing this over and over again. And apparently there's something wrong with me that I don't just stop.
Well, do you break bolts when you're tightening them up or when you're loosening them?
Taking them off.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, see, that usually is not your fault. I mean, for example, you were taking off a bolt which maybe has never been removed in 20 years.
Right.
And so there it is, rusted away, and as I remember, that's not a very heavy bolt.
Right. No, it's very...
It's a 5/16 bolt,
it's very long.
And
it's thin.
Right.
And it's also all encrusted with rust in there. Right.
Yeah. So you're in a water environment, so I can make an excuse for that one. I'm not surprised that you broke that one off.
Okay.
Are there any others that you've broken? Maybe we can really help you to become
and
a moron.
And the brake caliper bolt you broke. You broke the bolt that holds the wedge into the brake caliper.
Right.
Right. That was break all the time, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, it may not be your fault.
I guess what you'll learn eventually is...
to take it to somebody in the first place.
Well, no. I mean, is how hard to push and how hard not to push.
Okay. Are there any tricks or...
Yeah.
If you, for example, had a penetrating spray to put on there,
yep,
that would be an alternative. And you would try to move it a little bit. You would try to loosen it, then try to tighten it, then try to loosen it, and try to persuade it out. You'd go loose, tight,
right.
Till
right.
Finally you got it moving. You'd spray some more stuff. If you had a torch.
Yeah, well, the brake one was like that. I think it took me like 3 days to break it.
You did.
You know, yeah. I'd spray it and I'd wiggle it a little bit and spray it. And I don't know. I think by day three, I finally got frustrated and put like a 6-foot pipe wrench.
Well, yeah. You have to resist that temptation. But I think, Jeremy, that you have a future here.
Yeah, I mean, the sprays and heat will usually help you. But sometimes it's inevitable. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
All right, great.
Yeah, if you were breaking them when you were tightening them,
yep,
then I'd tell you to give up, sell your tools.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then tell these guys who are calling you the bolt breaker that none of these is your fault.
All right. Well, thanks for your help, guys.
All right.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Jeremy.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kathy from Croton.
Croton on Hudson?
How did you know?
No kidding.
Yeah.
So is this Kathy, let's see, if it's Croton on Hudson, that would be Kathy with a C.
Wrong. wrong. Mm. Kathy with a K.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
Well, anyway, I don't have a problem with my car.
You don't?
Great.
No.
Thank God, Kathy.
I do have a car guy problem.
Car guy. Oh.
My husband is a mechanic, too.
He is, huh?
Is he?
Yeah. And I was hoping that you guys would be able to solve some of the mysteries of how a mechanic's mind works.
That's a little bit of a problem. You've got some things there that just don't fit in the same sentence, ma'am.
Like mechanic and mind?
Yeah.
Like, I want to know why he tells a customer it'll take me 4 days to fix your car, and he doesn't work on it until the afternoon of the fourth day.
Well, he was right.
Well, no, I'll tell you why.
Why?
There are certain jobs for which you have to get ready.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are.
And he knows that this is the kind of job that he has to work up to.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like a clutch on a Rover.
Exactly. I mean, there are certain jobs you say,
You have to think about them. You have to take in the ambiance of the car.
No. You have this dilemma that you really don't want to do the job because it's a horrible, rotten job and your knuckles are already scraped down to bare bone.
Uh-huh.
But you hate to see the money disappear.
Oh,
we call this in psychology an approach avoidance conflict.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a big one.
And that frequently occurs. And so what happens is you procrastinate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do about it?
No. Well, what's wrong? I mean, what do you care?
Do you work with your husband?
Sort of, kind of. I help him out.
Yeah.
Very good.
What other kinds of problems do you have?
Well, I want to know why a mechanic's method of telling time is different than everybody else's.
Yeah?
If my husband says to me, I'll be up in an hour, I know I am not going to see him for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Well, usually mechanic's time is just the other way around.
Uh-huh.
You know?
No.
That he works on it for an hour, and he says it took 3.5 hours to do your brake job. And at $50 an hour.
That's $400, because they're not good at multiplication either.
But you don't do that with your wife.
No, but it is true because
you do get lost, however. I frequently get lost when I'm doing something, especially when the business day is over. I do my best work when all the customers have gone and the phone has stopped ringing and all that. It's nice and quiet.
Well, he does, too. He'll work till 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I do, too. You know why?
Why?
You can't think during the day when you have to think about all the other stuff.
Yeah, people are bothering you.
People, you're bothering you. Leave me alone. I want to fix the car. So after everyone leaves, I usually take a nap for about an hour or two, and then I go right to work.
Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Yes.
Why is it when your wife tells you something and she speaks to you clearly,
you don't listen?
In your native language.
Yeah.
You can't remember 30 minutes later. But
you know why?
A car going by you in the other direction, 60 miles an hour.
And you say, that guy needs a water pump.
You can remember every detail 6 months later.
Well, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's listening.
Doesn't make a sound,
yeah,
right?
I mean, my mother's greatest observation was that nobody listens. And mechanics, least of all,
what?
And especially.
What did you say?
What? Especially when their wives are talking to them.
I can look at him and I can say, I told you. It was a Friday night. We were standing in the kitchen. You had on your orange sweatshirt. And this is what I told him. He goes, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I want to defend your husband. Fixing cars is very complicated. It used to be easy.
Okay.
When we first started doing it. This was easy. That's why we got into it. We figured it was something we could handle. But it, like a disease, it sneaked up on us.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it got very complicated. It really, really did. You know, when I was thinking about it, fixing cars is like almost being a doctor. And then I thought, no, it's worse.
It is.
Because
it is
if you're
worse.
A doctor, you basically have, right, one make, two models.
That's right.
With a few variations.
And your patient can tell you.
Not very many variations.
Not many variations.
No.
And the list of diseases, I mean, every once in a while they add a one or two, but they cure one or two.
Though.
So you don't have to worry about them anymore. They disappear. Yeah. But cars are constantly changing.
There are 600 makes and models of cars being sold in this country right now. Not to mention all the ones
that have been
past.
Sold.
Right.
You know, so it's like 12,558 cars that you have to have in there.
But what is that to do?
It's sort of like if you went to the doctor and you said, check my heart. And he said, gee, let's see. Where's the heart in this model?
Oh, where were you born?
Yeah. Where were you born in this?
What's your production date?
What year? What's your production date? That mean, oh, that means your heart is down here in your big toe. I mean, how can you remember all that? So mechanics are frequently distracted. So even though they are looking right at you, and it appears as though they are listening, they aren't.
How can you tell the difference?
You can't. They have developed this technique of looking aware for so long. Because they do it all day with the customer. The customer tells them what's wrong with the car, and they don't pay any attention.
Nope, they don't.
But the truth of the matter is, Kathy,
yeah,
it's men in general. It has nothing to do with mechanics.
Are mechanics worse?
I don't know. I've never been a man before, so I can't tell you. See you, Kathy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, you've done it again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Myanmar Arctic Char, Steak Tartare, Carib Bar, Cookie Jar, Zoop the Bar, We'll All Snub the Salad Bar, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Inovera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. The Car Talk liaison to the British Isles is Isaiah, old chap.
Isaiah, old chap. I like it.
Our staff bodyguard is Liam Malone. Our director of deep sea research is Mariana Trench. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our director of genealogical research is Manny Cousins. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian Albin Heard Before. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Outavindo. Our staff auditor is Euripides Iripidos. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our rental property manager is Ulysses Up. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the FBI agents posing as Peruvian folk singers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And above all, don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1408, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, everything you've always wanted to know about donating your used car.
But we're far too uninterested to ask.
If you have an old car that you don't want to bother selling,
or you don't want to accept an insulting trade-in offer from a dealer. By the way, I've never received an insulting trade offer for any of my cars.
Oh, yeah, and anything other than, get that heap off my lot was cause for celebration in your case.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, there is an alternative. You can donate your car for the benefit of your local public radio station.
It's easy, and details are available all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the president of NPR heads over to the hardware aisle to pick up two rolls of duct tape whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.